After these things, Jesus went over to the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. And a great multitude followed him because they saw his miracles, which he did on them that were diseased. And Jesus went up into a mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. When Jesus then lifted up his eyes, he saw a great company come unto him. He saith unto Philip, Whence shall we buy bread, that these may eat? And this he said to prove him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 pennyworth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, saith unto him, There is a lad here, which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, but what are they among so many? And Jesus said, Make the men sit down. And there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were set down, and likewise to the fishes, as much as they would. When they were filled, he said unto his disciples, Gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves which remained over and above unto them that had eaten. Then those men, when they had seen the miracle that Jesus did, said, This is of a truth that prophet that should come into the world. When Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. And when even was now come, his disciples went down into the sea, and entered into a ship, and went over the sea toward Capernaum. And it was now dark, and Jesus was not come to them. And the sea arose by reason of a great wind that blew. So when they had rowed about 25 or 30 furlongs, they see Jesus walking on the ship, and drawing nigh into the ship, and they were afraid. But he saith unto them, It is I, be not afraid. Then they willingly received him into the ship, and immediately the ship was at the land whither they went.
Well, I thank you for reading. I thank you for coming out this morning, all of you that seem fit to come. It's a beautiful day, wonderful day. Glad that we can be here. Fred read about, a couple of miracles, actually, that we're pretty familiar with, I think. We've all seen and heard people talk about feeding the multitudes with just a few fish, a few loaves of bread. And, of course, the one where he is here and conducts their ship immediately to the land. And that is a familiar story, I think, feeding the 5,000, especially. Talk about it every once in a while. The thing about this chapter that makes it unique in my mind is that it's at this point that Christ is at the pinnacle of his ministry. This is when he was the absolute most popular that he ever was or would be among the people at that time. This is the time when, by the 15th verse, it says he knew that they would make him a king, so he had to get away from them. He had to go out and go to a desert place, and if he hadn't have, they would have took him by force, it says, and made him a king. So they knew that he was something special, and they knew that he was the Christ. A lot of them confessed that he was the prophet. But the time you get to the end of the chapter, we didn't read all the way to the end, but by the time you get to the end of the chapter, everyone has left him, with the exception of the disciples. And he even asked them, he said, Do you guys want to leave? You know, he went from 5,000 to 12, one of them a devil, and he's so dejected, he said, You guys want to leave too? See, popularity is a fleeting thing. I know right now it's really popular for churches not to have names. Well, they have names. They just don't call themselves what they are. It's the new Peace Branch Church or whatever. That's popular. Things are popular at different times. Mike likes to watch Home improvement shows, do-it-yourself shows. Gray is really popular right now. And it won't be in 5 years because gray is not a color. It's just gray. But things do that. They get really popular and then they get unpopular. And Jesus was the same way. He got really popular for a little bit until he told them the truth about some things. And when he did that, then he wasn't popular anymore. What really amazes me is if you look at Mark chapter 6, verse 52, the disciples said they considered not the miracle of the loaves, for their heart was hardened. You realize the impact of what that says? The disciples did not consider the miracle of the 5,000 being fed with this little lad's lunch because their heart was hard. They had seen so many miracles. They had seen Jesus do so many things. They didn't even classify this as a miracle. And that's why some things get really popular and then they get unpopular. It's because people are fickle. They really are. They latch on to something. Oh, this is just wonderful. Oh, okay, I'm tired of it now. You know, just like kids with a toy. That's the most precious toy in the world. Me and sister are going to fight over it for days. They pull it from each other. Everybody wants it. And then, oh, something shiny. And they both drop it and they're gone. And that's the way people are about everything, really. It's really popular for a little while. And then it's just not much. And Jesus was going through the same thing. Going through the same problem. He was getting ready to go way down in the valley next. But here in between, we find another little story that I often overlook. It's not as spectacular as the one where Peter gets out of the boat, you know, and tries to walk. But this one is a little bit more my speed, I think. Because here we have the importance of Jesus' presence in time of trial. Now, storms and trials come upon us in our life. They usually come unexpectedly. They usually come rather quickly. Sometimes we don't see them coming. Sometimes we do. Now, they tell me the geography of the Sea of Tiberias or the Sea of Galilee is such that storms come over the hills really quickly, and you don't even know they're coming. You know, they didn't have like the little phones that we have where they can hit the weather bug and look at the radar and see how things are going. I don't think they knew that a storm was coming when they left. If they had, they probably wouldn't have left. But if there, you know, like I say, if there'd been a storm going on, they wouldn't have left. But the same thing really is true with our life. If something is bothering us really bad, we don't run away from Christ too easily. We want to stay up close to Him. But it's when things are start going pretty well for us, then we want to see Jesus. We want to know where Jesus is at. And, you know, it's almost sad sometimes you hear people that you know good and well that they hadn't darkened the door of a church for 5 years. And then they'll call you on the phone and they'll say, "Oh, can you pray for us? I know the Lord will help us out." And I'm like, "Where have you been for the last 5 years? I mean, I know I shouldn't be that way. I know it shouldn't get under my skin, but it does. But we all do it. We all do it. We get like we don't want, we don't need, we don't care about Christ until we have a problem. And then we want Him to be our best buddy. And then as soon as the problem's over, we're done with Him again. It's really not fair. It's not sad. It's not right, but that's the way we do. Our life comes and we want something. We want help. You know, it's like the old story, it's not a matter of if problems will arise, it's a matter of when. You're going to have problems. The Bible tells us the world is full of trials and tribulations and upsets, and they're meant for everybody, including you and me. Including anyone, even those, the most special Christian you think you've ever seen in your life, there's trials meant for them. And they will come to them. But Jesus, the nature of our Savior, is that He comes right on time to help if we'll ask Him. You know, he promised us, Hebrews 13:5, he said, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. He said that. I will never leave you or forsake you. Sometimes we feel like maybe he has forsaken us. Sometimes we ask ourselves, Lord, where are you? Sometimes we ask ourselves, why do I have to go through this? But Jesus never loses sight of us. In the 48th verse of the 6th chapter of Mark, this same story, he says, he saw them toiling and rowing, for the wind was contrary to them, and about the fourth watch of the night, he cometh unto them, walking upon the sea, and would have passed them by. That's how bad this storm is, that a bunch of grown fishermen, people that have been in boats half their natural life, are rowing as hard as they can row, have done everything they know to do, and a guy walking could have passed them. They wasn't getting anywhere. They were doing probably well to stay on top of the water. And here's Jesus, it says, he saw them. So Jesus was watching this whole thing as it happened. He watched them leave when it was pretty weather. He saw the storm come. Maybe he sent the storm. You ever think about that? Maybe Jesus called for the clouds to come down. Give me a little wind. He is, after all, you know, master of the universe. And one of the promises that we have in Scripture, and one of the good things about it, is that when we go through trials, when we go through tribulations, He is never very far away. Even though we can't feel His presence, He is not that far away. You know, I watched kids when they were little. My kids, I'm sure Andy and all y'all have kids, do the same thing. You watch them when they're playing, and you're ready to help them when they finally decide to ask. Sometimes it's better just to let them struggle, and then finally they'll say, you know, I need some help. You've been watching them all along. You wasn't going to let them get hurt. You wasn't going to let them do anything weird. You was just going to watch them and see what they did and help them when you needed to. Our Savior's the same way. They couldn't make it alone. They was rowing, and they wasn't getting anywhere. How many times you been like that in your life? You're working just as hard as you can work, and you're not going anywhere. You know, you're lucky if you're going in circles. You know, you just feel like you're just stuck. You know, I tell you, when you get to the end of your rope, you better tie a knot in it and hang on. That's what the world will tell you, man. Just better latch on to what little's left and just hang on as tight as you can. But I think what Jesus would tell us a lot of times is, well, when you get to the end of the rope, then you need to let go and take my hand, because I'm there. What will it be? Jesus said he came with them to Galilee. He didn't come to stop the storm. You know, and he did that. In the other story of the storm, it says that he arose and he rebuked the winds, and they became still. Let's just read Matthew 8:26. He said to them, why are ye so fearful, ye of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. Okay, that is one thing that God can do. That's one thing that Jesus does for us. He rebukes the storms. And then there's a great calm. It's not what he came for this time. It's not the reason that he came to the disciples. This time, he came to comfort them and to reassure them in the middle of the storm. John 6:20, be not afraid, it is I. Don't be afraid. With all those few little words, you know that those hard hearts had begun to melt just a little bit. And they knew that they were safe because Jesus was there. Psalm 63 and 5 says, "My soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth shall praise thee with joyful lips when I remember thee upon my bed and meditate on thee in the night watches." My soul shall be joyful when I think about you, when I meditate on you. When is the worst time of the day for worrying about troubles? I put to you probably between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. Somewhere around in that general neighborhood. That's when you did your day, you've done your business, you've done everything you needed to do, and you crawl into bed and your eyes pop open and they're not going shut. And you're running through everything you did that day, everything you done tomorrow, and then you start remembering stuff that you forgot. Then you start thinking of things that aren't going right, and you start thinking of what I need to do about this, what I need to do about that. Oh my goodness, I forgot completely about that. I never will have money or time to do that. And it just on and on and on and on. It's not a new condition. We have sleeping pills now. We have little things we take and we go to bed and then our mind just shuts off. Well, that's one way to do it. You can do that. Or you can think about Christ. David said, "I will remember thee upon my bed." And so what did David do? When David went to bed, he didn't count sheep. He talked to Jesus. Didn't know him as Jesus then. He knew him as God, but he still, he talked to the Father. He talked to him. Melts away our fears when he comes in. Verse 21, the first part of the verse says, "And then they willingly received him into the ship." They willingly received him into the ship. The disciples didn't seem to be too concerned about whether or not he was there when the weather was okay. And we're just like that. We don't care too much. When everything's going well, it's great. But when not, it says, "Then they willingly received them." Him. Willingly received him. In James 4:8, it says, "Draw nigh to God and he'll draw nigh to you." If you ask for Christ to come to you, he'll come. He will not, however, force himself upon you. He didn't hear, and he won't in your life. He has to be invited. Matthew and Mark tell us that as soon as Jesus stepped into the ship, the storm stopped. And John tells us further than that, that the moment he stepped into the ship was at land. Now, why do you suppose that was? I'll tell you what I think it was. The storm had served its purpose. The rowing had served its purpose. He was done with that trial. That trial had shown him and them that they needed him. And so it was over. You know, sometimes we look at trials as being forever. They're not. They have specific purposes that they serve, and then they're done. And then we move on and we go to the next one, and the next one's usually harder. Sadly as that is, that's the truth. I used to hate that when I was a kid. I was in school, and just about the time I would learn what I needed to know, when I learned the lesson, they went right straight to the next one. Well, why? Because that's what you do. That's how you learn. If you already know how to do something, there's no point in staying there. Go on. And that's the way trials work too, I'm afraid. It seems like when we finally figure out how to deal with something, well, then something new comes along. It's God's design. Everything that they had done, everything in our life, our trials and afflictions, if we draw Christ close enough, they will stop. They'll stop if you draw it close enough. As soon as their purpose is done. Because His presence removes fear. His presence is never forced on you, but it changes everything when He gets there. this changes everything? Do we know Jesus' presence in our life? Do we have His presence in our life? How do we handle life's problems? I guess that's what it boils down to. God's going to allow these troubles. He's going to allow these problems. They need to make us grow. And they need to teach us things about Him. Now, we all know they're going to come. Job said in Job 14:1, "Man that is born of a woman is a few days and full of trouble." In chapter 5, verse 7, he said, "Yet man is born into trouble as the sparks fly upward." And Jesus said the same thing, really. John 16:33, he said, "These things I have spoken to you, that in me you might have peace. In the world you shall have tribulation. Be of good cheer, I have overcome the world." So Job and Jesus and everybody is telling us that life is going to be full of problems. It's going to be problems and trials. And Jesus says, "Come to me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Remember that little passage there in Matthew 28? "Come to me, and I will give you rest." Now, I don't know that he's talking entirely about the end of our life. I think he might be talking a little bit about this life. But what do we do? Well, a lot of people worry, they fret, they stew. Most people do that, I think. That's the wrong place. That's the wrong place to put your fears. It's the wrong place to put your troubles. Where are you supposed to put them? Philippians chapter 4, verse 6, "Be careful for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God." Don't sit and worry about something. Go take it to God. Don't fret over stuff. Take it to God. Well, some of us like to take it to our friends, you know. "Oh, well, we'll tell everybody all about it. They'll tell me what to do and they'll help me out. At least I get it off my chest if I'm telling some friend about it." Is that going to help? Well, it helps a little, I guess. It makes you feel a little better. Is not going to help. Because they can't do anything about it. In Job 13, verse 3, his friends had gotten under Job's skin. He said, "You're forgers of lies. You're all physicians of no value. Oh, that you would altogether hold your peace. It should be your wisdom." He's over it. He'd had all these problems, all these trials, and all they was doing was telling him how pitiful he was. He's like, "You know what? You guys are pitiful doctors. I'm just done with you. I wish you'd just shut up." What he said. He said, "You're not helping. Be quiet." The other problem with friends is that they'll lie to you. They'll let you waller in your self-pity. They'll tell you, "Oh, you got a right to be sad. You got a right to do this. You got a right to do that." They might even sympathize with you and tell you, "Oh, well, yeah, I know, I understand." But they can't help you. Do we not understand that? They can't help. Worrying about it doesn't help. I could tell Andy all about my problems, and he would probably sit and listen patiently before he went to sleep. And he would pat me on the back, "All right, I'm so sorry to hear that." But what good does it do? You can run from them. I keep thinking somewhere there's a little log cabin in the mountains or a little sand dune beach cottage or something that somewhere that I need to be at. It ain't gonna help. They'll follow you right there. I know they will. They'll follow you right to the door. It don't help to run away from them. I'm not even sure it helps to fight them too much. If we fight every problem that we have, sometimes we're like the disciples. We just rode all night and we were right in the middle of where we started. Father is the one that will help us. We need to take our burdens to Him. We need to talk to Him. There is somebody that cares about your situation. There's also somebody that can do something about it. 1 Peter 5 and 7 says, "Cast all your care upon Him, for He careth for you." The sometimes we get to thinking of God as this way off person that really probably loves us, but you know, it doesn't do us a whole lot of good. I can pray to him, but it's not really going to change anything. You know, that's where we begin to make the mistake, is we consider God to be somewhere far off. We consider our problems to be too trivial or too urgent to be praying to God, because you never know when he's going to answer. It's not true. It's not true. He can be very close if we will allow him. He will not, however, kick down the door to help you. He will only come if you invite him. Jesus walked through loneliness. He walked through severe need. He walked through death. He walked through everything that we walk through. Therefore, he can know and he can care. Hebrews 4:15 says, "We have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin." Jesus went through everything that we go through. He can do something about it. Ephesians 3:20, "Now to him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us." He can do more than we would even think to ask him to do. Job 42:2, "I know that thou canst do everything, and that no thought can be withholden from thee." That's the deal. We live and we need God in our life. We need him to dwell with us. He promised us that. He promised that I'll dwell with you. I'll dwell in you. I'll come in and make my abode there. But I think too often we're pushing him out. He'd be a little bit more like Mary. Remember what Mary said when the angel came and told her that she's going to have a child? Mary said in Luke 1:38, "Behold, the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto me according to thy word." And the angels departed. That was her way of thinking. It was, whatever you want, I'm your servant. Whatever you want. Isaiah 40:12, "Who hath measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, and meted out heaven with a span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales, and the hills in a balance." You realize God did all that? Measure the waters of the earth in the hollow of his hand. Weigh out a mountain on scale. See him weighing Mount McKinley? Sitting down over. They're big, ain't they? Some of you just got back from some mountains and stuff. Those things are huge. Knows how much dirt is in the earth. Knows the measure. That's our God. Now, he is powerful. You tell me that is not a powerful God. And he has offered to live in our heart with us and help us when we have problems. You know, my problems suddenly just get really, really small when I consider the vastness of God. The other night, I told Sister Melba this. The other night, I was out walking in the yard, and I come in, I sit down in my chair, and I pop the feet rest up, you know, how we all like to do when we come in. Doing something. I wasn't out there very long. It's hot. And I come in, I pop that up, and I look down. And I said, "Hey, Fred, come here a minute." He said, "What?" And I said, "Would you grab that tick that's on my leg?" Every little tick running up my leg. He's like, "Yeah." He grabbed that thing, and I heard the stove in there, tick, tick, tick. Bye-bye tick. You know, he loves to do that. But you think about it, that was a very minor thing, right? I had a little tick crawling up the leg. Wasn't even hardly enough for me to get up, let alone get Fred up. I knew he'd enjoy it. But here's the thing. How hard was it for him to take that little tick and do away with it? How hard would you think it is for God to take the biggest problem in your life pluck it out and do away with it. How hard do you really think it is for him? It's not that hard. Sometimes he will take the burden away. Remember in 1 Kings 17 when the widow lady needed something to eat? The prophet visited her, didn't he? He gave her all the corn and all the, well, he gave her all the grain. He gave her all the grain and all she needed to last out through the whole crop. The scriptures also tell us there were a lot of widow women in them days that didn't get that. So sometimes he'll help us. Sometimes he'll give us what we need to get through the storm. He's not going to take it down. He's not going to make it stop. He's going to give us what we need to carry through. Sometimes he will help us by easing the burden a little. Remember in Ruth, he didn't make Ruth suddenly everything roses and honey. He made it to where Ruth could run into Boaz. See, there was an issue there. There was a problem there. You can look at that trial and you can think, why did all that happen to Ruth? Wouldn't it be interesting to know that maybe it happened so that Ruth could get to Boaz? So that she could become part of the lineage of Christ? What an honor that is. Wouldn't that be worth a little bit of a burden? And then sometimes he'll just let you rest in it. 2 Corinthians 12:9, he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Paul said, then most gladly, therefore, will I rather suffer glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. So here's the deal. He'll either remove it, or he'll help you with it, or he'll tell you, you know, it's really not that big a deal. You need to deal with it. That's what he told Paul. But we can rest on this, that he will help us. Paul said, my God shall supply all your need according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus. He will help. Sometimes it's not the way we want him to. Sometimes it's not the way we think he ought to. But he is still the all-supplying, all-knowing, all-wonderful God. And he will. He will help. So just a thought this morning that, I don't know, helps me sometimes to realize that I need to take the focus off of me. I need to take the focus off of my life and my problems. And I need to put it more on God. In fact, it needs to stay on God. Yeah. I haven't heard the song, I don't guess. I heard somebody was talking about it the other day. It said it's very difficult to see the love of Christ when you're looking at the storm. Sometimes you doubt it. But it's not, you can't doubt it when you look at the cross. So maybe we need to look less at the problems in our little life and look more at what Christ done for us. That's what we're going to do here in a minute. We're going to memorialize Christ's death on the cross. And that's where we need to keep our focus. So I'll leave the lesson with you. If you need the help of the church in any way this morning, we invite you to come. I'll be able to stand.